we used to call you? The November Man.
Hello and welcome to episode 29 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Tonight is a special night. We are all together and we're not drinking, but we have Shark by Tara, so it's fine.
We do. We're not kidding. I know that you were just like, haha, that's funny, but seriously, you can see it right now. It was my birthday, and Perry, being the loving friend that she was, knew that what I wanted more than anything in the world
was Shark by Tara. You can't have a text message conversation about something like that and not expect me to go and buy it.
No, that kept us up kind of late. Also, it does smell nice.
It really does.
It smells like grapefruit juice and flowers.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Apparently lavender-colored flowers. It's a nice fruity smell.
It's not worse than that, like, Victoria's Secret shit that you used to put on when you were in high school.
No. It's actually... Angel was the shit.
For the record, in our perfume review portion of the show, Shark by Tara, better than Angel by Victoria's Secret.
So now maybe we should talk about movies. Although I guess that is kind of movies. Tonight we're going to talk about As Above, So Below, Startup, and The November Men. And we're going to start with As Above, So Below, and I believe I am describing that. And dear God, I hope I could describe it well, because we literally just came from our screening of that. So we saw it a half hour ago. It is a shaky cam horror movie. That's probably a really bad way to start.
It is the biggest part of the movie.
You're calling it found footage, but it's shaky cam.
Very, very shaky cam. So it's about this one girl, Scarlett, remember her name, and she's an archaeologist, she has a PhD, she speaks all these languages, has lots of degrees.
She is a black belt in Krav Maga.
Oh yeah, that's
right.
Too.
That never very comes in handy, but they throw that out
just
know,
so you know. That's why she can barrel through those things at the end.
That doesn't
just
make
slipped.
Sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, she's looking for the Sorcerer's Stone, and I have Harry
Philosopher's
Potter
Stone. They do call it Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, do they?
Which
they
is
do.
What they call it
no
in the British version.
They call it the Philosopher's Stone,
but the thing is that in the American version of Harry Potter, they call it the Sorcerer's Stone because we don't really pay attention to Greek or to English mythology. But they did say Philosopher's Stone, but still, I thought Harry Potter.
Yeah,
no.
Did they ever say Sorcerer's Stone? Or
no,
did they just
no.
completely make that
it's
up?
Just that, like, it's just that, like, in Harry Potter,
yeah.
sometimes they, like,
okay, but they do reference Nicholas Flamel.
They do.
Yes.
All right. So she is looking for the Philosopher's Stone, and she's got to find all these clues to get there, and she convinces a friend of hers and then this other guy and his team that they meet to go down into the catacombs under Paris, because that's where it is. So they go down there, and they do, like, climbing and crawling in caves, and all this crazy shit happens, and the camera shakes. And that's
actually
the
entire plot. So this is a rare movie that, like, normally I feel like we're like, oh, you know, movies, we should watch them on the big screen. This is a rare movie that I thought would actually benefit from, like, you watching on YouTube on your laptop, because the camera is so shaky that at points, like, I found myself, like, purposely, like, kind of, like, you know, looking to this side and just, like, trying to watch it with my peripheral vision, because it was making me dizzy.
It's nauseating.
And
I
it's
think within
shaky
5
during,
minutes I wasn't feeling well.
Yeah, it's not just shaky during moments of action. It's like her casually talking about who Nicholas Flamel is, and the camera guy's still like...
It's a very honest representation, though, of what people would... Because, you know, it made me think of the videos that I was making during The Walking Dead Escape, where you're running and, like, all you can do
but
is
it's
go
not
like
even,
that.
But it's not even just while you're,
it
they're running. It's
the
like,
caves.
But it's like, okay, it'll be like... No, in this movie, it'll be like, you know, like, if me and Harry are standing and having a conversation, you would think, you know, if I'm the cameraman, I'm not moving, the camera shouldn't be moving. For some reason, it would, like, zoom in, it would zoom out, it would, like, go
there
this
were,
way.
There were
like,
zooms.
It was
also,
so
it's
weird.
There's supposed to be a documentarian in the group, so the fact that all the camera work is so bad just doesn't make
that's
sense.
That's not very established very well.
No.
Well, no. And
nothing in this movie
that
is
that was actually
that's
one of
true.
The big problems that I had, and I was wondering about most of the way through, is, like, why do they know each other? Like, what's his relationship with her? Because the other guy, George,
lazy.
They really made that a big part of the movie. He's some guy, he speaks some language that she
Aramaic.
Doesn't speak. Yeah, and, like, everything's written in Aramaic, so she needs him. They had some
funny,
past
she speaks
relationship.
Six languages, but the one she needs to know to find this thing.
Seriously.
It's just, there's a lot of, and, like, the thing is that there's a lot of, because it's a found footage movie, it's the same problem we had with that tornado movie that I've already forgotten the name of.
Into the Storm.
That one, right, okay. So same thing in this one, where because it's found footage, they can have people literally looking at the camera and being like, hello, I'm Christy Puchko. I'm such and such years old from this place, and here's what I'm doing here. And it's just so lazy. It's lazy. Like, your film, you should show us. Show, don't say. But instead, they just tell you all this stuff, most of it that's irrelevant. And then when they, like, my biggest problem with the movie is that I said it's like a trailer in that they build up to these moments that are either going to be an action scene or a scary scene, and instead it's just shaky cam nonsense and sound effects, and you don't see very much.
Honestly, the sound design was very good in this.
The stuff that they do show, is in the trailer. Like, most of, like, the bigger pieces, I was like, oh, I've already, like, seen this in the trailer. Like, it doesn't, and, like, you know, like, in the trailer, does that scene with the piano? Like, I was like, oh, okay, there must be more to this, obviously. Nope, there isn't.
He just presses the key.
Yeah, no,
that's
creepy.
They never go back to that.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a lot of scenes where they fall or a roof caves in, and it's just that they can't afford to show that, I guess. So they just shake the camera around. And I have to say, if I had paid to see this movie, I would have been furious because there's so little to actually see.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the action looks like, it looks like if I had, like, dropped my iPhone into my purse and then, like, was walking around. Like, that's
that
what it
looks
like.
It's
just, like, a lot of just nonsense.
With all
I've seen her purse cameras, that's totally true.
There's a lot to complain about here, but I don't think it was that bad. It is probably, I mean, this isn't saying much, it's probably one of the better, more interesting shaky cam movies I've seen. I did like the idea of the story and where they were going with it.
Yeah,
I've never seen anything like that.
I like
before.
The idea of the story. What is cool is that they did shoot in the catacombs, though at times that made me uncomfortable because there's, like, a lot of business where they're interacting with bones and stuff, and I just kind of thought that if those are...
Well, I didn't know they actually shot there. That's crazy.
There's certain scenes that if they actually did shoot there, I take issue with because that's pretty disrespectful, but that aspect of it is interesting. The plot is interesting, but the problem is that once they establish a supernatural element... there's no rules to it.
Mm-mm.
And that's very, as a viewer, very frustrating.
It
there's
feels
like nothing to hold on
I
to.
I felt like I was being cheated because, like, at every turn, it's just like, why is this happening?
Well,
I don't know.
There's nothing
is.
To be afraid of that way. You don't know what's going to trigger someone to die, so you can't be worried about anything. And it's like what I was saying to you guys also, the only way to gauge when something bad was going to happen is, like, you know, the camera would shake all around and all of a sudden it would stop and you just knew. Like, it got quiet, the camera would stop, and you knew something was going to pop out. But, on the other hand, I thought that the tunnels, it had like a haunted house effect, where it got to a point where I was genuinely nervous when they would turn around a corner, like, what would be there?
Yeah,
I mean, it's all jump scare type shit, but I think that was probably more effective than the other ones.
The best scene was, there's a scene where someone is stuck in one of the tunnels, because these are...
Oh, that was...
Yeah.
Best, and you know, the best camera work there, it just sits on it.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, to explain... it's not tunnels like a hallway. There's one tunnel where they're literally crawling through a bunch of bones, and one of the guys gets stuck, and he starts to panic, and they can't pull him out or help him. They just yell to try to save him, and it's really upsetting. You're just stuck with him, and he's dropped his camera, and it's pointed at him, and he's just sitting there and freaking out, and you can see the roof, and you can see the floor, and that was for me the most engaging moment. I felt very uncomfortable, I felt claustrophobic, and I thought, oh, this is gonna turn around and become really interesting, and then it just doesn't.
Well, it just goes to show that shit like that, when it's, you know, no frills and all that, that's the best kind of stuff, when it's just a clever idea and a good performance. But the only thing that takes away from that moment is my biggest problem with this movie.
Oh, yeah, I know
freaking hated the main character. So, when this poor guy is stuck in here, she's calling
he's having a panic attack.
He's flipping out, and she's calling out to him, like, come on, you can do it. And he's just like, shut up and keep moving so I can get out. And she's just like, come on. And he's like, shut the
she's
fuck up.
She's trying
and
to go back, which doesn't make any sense. And he's telling her to go forward so that there's some room where he can actually
move.
But,
like, it's a bigger problem with, like, that character in general. So the main character, what's
she's
Scarlet.
She's
irritating. So the whole plot is driven by the fact that she has this, like, burning desire. She has to get the Philosopher's Stone. They never do an adequate job of explaining.
Explain, like,
why
for reasons instead of
falling. But it's like it's something that she wants so badly, but they never really explain why, and yet it's something she wants so badly that she's like totally okay with sending like five other people into like mortal danger so that she can get this one.
They explain
thing.
It's very risky, though. To be fair, everybody going into it knows that it's very risky, so it's not like she's
they know it's risky,
like,
but
it's
not
the other
just...
guy. The leader of the other guys.
Yeah,
I whatever his name was.
I thought the performances actually were for the most.
Well, I was going to say Pep, because that's what's written
that's
on the
what
wall.
He, yeah, that's what
I liked him.
Means.
I thought he was very good.
The performance
well,
is for the most part
just
pretty good.
He
yeah.
got reduced to just explaining things and saying stuff like, we're going to die, or we can't get out, or
well,
there's
a
no
lot
car
of
here.
The humor came from him, too. It's like, when they stated the obvious, that's when we connected with it. Because when Scarlett and George were talking, it was like, ooh, these symbols mean this and that. And like,
this
I know
something,
this is a PhD. And we're just like...
Okay. Yeah, they're okay. Like, this is a blankety blank event.
But then all of a sudden it would be like, well, this shit's crazy. And you're like, yeah.
Agreed, Pebble.
Yeah.
So, I guess we should probably move on. But
yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't.
I'd say if you like shaky cam horror and you're like, I'm the kind of person that'll see a trailer for pure crap like this, and because I kind of need that feeling in the movie theater every once in a while, I'm gonna go see it. Like, I mean, I'd probably watch this again if it was on TV.
I would say if you like shaky cam horror and you have a high tolerance for shaky cameras, I would also say if you don't, wait till, I'm not even kidding, wait till this comes out on VOD or DVD, because it is, if you don't have a high tolerance for that kind of thing, if you're the kind of person that gets, like, nauseous or gets a headache easily, like, it's gonna make you sick. Like,
don't sit up close.
It's very shaky.
I would say don't see this. It's just not interesting enough. It's fine.
It's okay.
I didn't dislike it exactly. I just didn't care. Like, I guarantee you if we talked about this tomorrow, I would have a really hard time remembering half of what happened. It just doesn't stick. So now let's move on, with no segue, because that's how I roll. To Startup. It is a British movie starring Jack O'Connell. And being startup is prison slang for meaning when you're a juvenile who's sent to an adult prison because you were just too violent to be handled, and that's what happens to Jack O'Connell's character. Jack O'Connell is from Skins, the British show, and in this he plays Eric Love, who is, as you guessed, a very violent teenager. And he goes to an adult prison where he not only needs to show everybody that he can't be pushed around, but also has to deal with the fact that his dad is there.
His dad, played by Ben Mendelsohn.
Right.
Who he hasn't
seen since he was five. Mm-hmm. And the only kind of hope he has of kind of figuring out who he is, I mean, I know that sounds like a weird thing to get into in this prison movie, but he's so full of rage, he is basically his own worst enemy, and there is a psychiatrist who comes into the prison and wants to talk with him, make him a part of this therapy group, a friend, and he really is fighting for Eric to have some way to express himself other than violence. And I'm making it sound like an after-school special, but this is an incredibly brutal movie. It's one of the rawest, most macho movies I've ever seen, and I gotta say, I think it's fantastic.
It's brutal in a way that feels earned, because I feel like we see so many movies that are going to be dark and gritty and just, you know, we're gonna be
and
shocking and violent,
like,
and stuff.
Glamorous. This is not glamorous.
It's not glamorous, and it's brutal in a way where, like, it makes sense for the environment, it makes sense for the characters, they're not, like, overly brutal to just
all the
for
violence
no
is so thoughtful. Like, I'm just thinking back to that sequence where he knows they're coming after him, and he knows exactly what to do, where to stand, how to behave. Like,
there's basically
sure
a scene where he realizes that some people are coming for him, and one of the first things he does is pour grease all over his body. And when you realize what he's doing, it's just terrifying. And then he, like, breaks his desk so he can have a leg to defend himself with. It's the people in this movie's capacity for violence is terrifying. And then what's really interesting is the movie takes its time, and in a way that's very true to the characters, shows that you their kind of soft underbelly and shows you the vulnerable side to them, but not in some kind of big Hollywood showy moment.
I thought it did. Yeah, it did such a great job of balancing it, because, like, Jack O'Connell is, like, he is actually, like, scary.
He's frightening.
He's like someone that you would never want to be
around. Oh, he's so small and so cute. Like, what's gonna happen to him? And, like, because he is. He's tiny and, like, and 10 minutes later, I was afraid of him.
Yeah, and yet, like,
it's
his performance.
It's an incredible pairing of sequences. That opening sequence where he doesn't say a thing and he's just kind of going through the motions,
and
getting settled
he's
in.
Stripped
and
down,
then,
they make him do the
and, like, you
and
actually believe in that little amount of time that he really wants to, you know, do prison right and keep out of trouble, and it just, like, it was an accident. And then
it's
so scary.
It's
such a severe accident, though. It's like,
well.
And, yeah, that's what's really intense. What he does, there's a moment, I feel like we can all understand the moment I'm talking about, where he attacks a guard, and the way he attacks the guard, you're just like, oh, no. Like, I've never seen anything like that in a movie.
Yeah.
And it's really incredible, because what's really interesting is this doesn't become one of those movies where everything's going to be okay. Like, Jack's character repeatedly points out that he's going to be in jail for a very long time. I don't think they ever say directly. Mm. But someone says they're in jail for 13 years. And there's, like, a beat, and he's like, oh, well, I'm in for longer than that, so... And you're just like, Jesus, like, he's a juvenile, and he's gonna be in jail for at least 13 years.
Well, kind of reasonable based on his behavior. And the crazy thing about this movie, though, is you could see him do these despicable things, but then at the same time, you could still feel sorry for him.
Yeah, because it's like,
there's a real depth to the character, and they create a vulnerability without, there's no scene where he, like, tears out his hair, and, I mean, I love Good Will Hunting, but as an example everyone knows, there's no scene where he, like, cracks and goes, what do you want me to say, did he fucking cut me, or anything, like, nothing like that happens in this. It's much quieter, and fitting for the movie.
It's
and,
earned. It's like riveting. This progression that makes you believe that, you know, he actually changed for a reason and not just like, oh, I brought up an idea from your past that caused all this.
Yeah, like there's like I feel like there's a version of this movie that's like very easy and very sappy or like very like, you know, too pretty for its own sake. This is a movie that felt really naturalistic, and a large part of that is Jack O'Connell's performance. I think that he does such an amazing job.
He's gonna be big.
He is. Okay, so he's in Unbreakable, the Angelina Jolie movie. He's gonna be big. That one is already like
71.
It's already getting a lot of attention.
That's going to Toronto and Telluride and New York.
He's the kind of actor that you can't take your eyes off of, and it's like, you know, a lot of what we've been saying about how he's like, you know, scary, but you also feel for him. It's so much of that comes from his performance, and I think that, you know, you were saying when you find out like what kind of person he is, it kind of like makes sense that he's in prison, and I thought that was so interesting because, you know, like you sympathize with him, and yet you're just like, oh my god, you're so fucked up. Like you actually should not be out in society.
I was riveted in part because there's just so much tension in this movie. Like I said in my review for Cinema Blend, like it's like thick like smoke. Like you could choke on the tension in this movie, and it builds to this climax and this ending that are just really interesting and very earned, but in no way like. This was so unlike prison movies I had seen before. I just didn't know where it was going to go.
The characters are all so volatile. Like, you know what they're capable of, but you don't know when they're going to just, like, lose their shit. And like, that was my favorite part about Ben Mendelsohn's character. He's another one that just went from one end to the other, and he was just a freaking nutcase. And it's like, every single actor that's in this movie, they have these moments where they're kind of just... walk like pacing himself thinking or just like watching someone and like well like when Ben Mendelsohn is watching him in the gym, I'm like drilling into his eyes being like, what are like, are you gonna flip out right now and hit him, like what's gonna go on?
It's so naturalistic. Like, okay, for one thing, this isn't the kind of movie that like explains the rules or like they talk in this like really thick prison slang that's hard to understand, but this movie just kind of drops you in there, and at first it's kind of disorienting, and at first I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to enjoy a movie when I don't understand what's going on, but in the end it turns out to be a better thing because it really just feels like you were like dropped into this environment. It never feels like anyone is acting. It never feels like, oh, this is a movie set and like movie is happening, plot is happening. Like, it never feels like
you're right.
That.
You're exactly right. It doesn't feel like the movie's reaching out to you, it just sucks you in. Like, I was the same way. The first couple of minutes, I was just like, I don't understand what anyone's saying, I don't get the dialogue, I don't get what's happening, and it didn't really affect my enjoyment of the movie at all, because then, eventually, I kind of clicked into the sounds, and it was fine, and it's just, it's such a scary movie.
Yeah.
So, it's actually, I'm gonna say it, it was way scarier to me than As Above, So Below.
It is, it's so tense, and it's also just, like, it's really heartbreaking, but then there are also even moments where it feels almost uplifting, like, there are, like, small victories.
There's, like, the perfect
really
balance of characters,
small
too.
Yeah. Victories.
It's, like, on the one hand, you have his father, then you've got, like, the higher-up guy in the prison who's, you know, trying to manipulate him in his own way, and then there's the...
Rupert Friend.
Yeah, his character trying to fix him in
another
way.
Rupert Friend's really interesting, too, because, like, he's not an especially tough guy, but he's around these guys who could easily kill him.
I love that group.
It's a really interesting...
I love the group where they're all together.
I wish I could remember the names of the other actors in the group therapy scenes, but it's incredible. It's just so hard to explain.
Or like the scene where they're making tea together.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, we talk about all the violence and how heartbreaking and all that.
That's balanced with these quiet moments.
One of the most heartwarming scenes I've seen all year.
It feels very, very human. Yeah, like, it doesn't shy away from, like, how ugly people can be and how horrible they can be and the fact that some people really just shouldn't be, like, walking around. But at the same time, you never, ever lose sight of, like, you know, what makes them human, what makes them vulnerable. Like,
because just because they're locked up doesn't mean that their lives are stagnant. Like,
it doesn't mean they're not people.
Yeah, like, they're still growing or you know, rotting internally based on what's happening to them, and that's what this movie's about, and it was just... I'm still rattled by it.
It's a tough really watch, but you get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
It's not, like... I don't normally avoid movies like that.
Yeah, no, like, I don't want to make it sound like, because we call Broken Circle Breakdown a tough watch, and it is. This is a different kind of tough watch. It's just that, like...
Like, Broken Circle Breakdown, I would never watch it ever again. Like, I'm glad I saw it, because it was a great film, and the performances were great, and I actually do still listen to the music all the time, but I would never want to experience that again. In this case, I didn't walk out with, like, that pit in my stomach that made me... I saw hope in where they left it, and also, I feel like this is one to... I mean, I guess I can't say this isn't true of Broken Circle Breakdown, that I could watch again and probably see a lot more that I missed. Yeah.
I just want to make people clear, like, you know, people were also saying 12 Years a Slave is hard to watch. It's not, like, that level of hard to watch. It's just that because this is not a prison movie that, like, relishes in the moments of violence and really represents...
There's nothing, like, stylish or heroic about the violence. Like, usually, you know, you'll have the movie where, like, the hero is locked up and he fights his way out and it's badass. Like, it's not that kind of thing.
Yeah, like... Yeah, it's the violence is breathtaking in a way where it. I mean, you know, it feels like you're watching real violence. It's upsetting. It's disturbing, and it feeds into a movie that's really incredible. And also, what's really fascinating, which we should wrap up, but this is by the same filmmaker whose last movie was Tonight You're Mine. Which
I didn't see that, but I saw Perfect Sense, and I'm not a fan of that.
I don't know that one.
There's a movie, not to make it about that, but there's a movie that's just freaking miserable to watch.
But, like, Tonight Your Mind is this charming romance about these two rockers who meet at a concert and accidentally get handcuffed together and can't stand each other, but then fall in love. But it's, like, sweet and grungy, and it's a totally different movie, but they both share this kind of energy and this kind of... that one's a little more predictable because it's a romance, but, like... I didn't realize that until after I had watched it, and I was like, who is this director? And I was like, that's insane to me, that this was the movie he made after that. So it's just really exciting, and I think we should all be keeping an eye out for him. It's
David Kenzie.
Thank you.
And Jack O'Connell, seriously, you're going to be seeing so much of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be everywhere very soon.
He reminds me of Fassbender in, like, Intensity.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that.
And on that note, let's move from the movie that we really like to... Well, I don't want to give it away, but I think I just gave it away
with my facial expression.
No. Okay, so the last movie we saw, the last movie we're going to talk about today is November Man, and it's Pierce Brosnan's, like, big return to the spy genre. Okay, so he plays, is it CIA? He plays a CIA agent. Like, in the beginning, he's, you know, training this, what's the guy's name? He's training
Mason.
Mason. He plays, Pierce Brosnan plays Peter Devereaux. He has a protege named Mason. In the beginning of the movie, they're, like, on a mission. It goes sour, and then it kind of just, like, skips ahead a few years, and, you know, he's retired now. He owns, like, a cute little cafe in Europe, but then, of course, someone from his past comes to, like, you know, pull him back in for one last job, because, of course. And if you're like, wow, this movie sounds so full of fucking bullshit cliches, oh, you just wait. So then he, you know, so the mission that he's assigned is to extract an American spy from, like, the Russian, like, working with, like, a Russian politician, and he needs to extract her and get her to safety, and it's, like, someone that they established that he has, like, history with and whatnot, and... Then there's, like, people double-cross each other and triple-cross each other, and before you know it, like, he and the protege are, like, fighting each other.
And he needs to figure out why. I think there's so much more, but it just doesn't...
There's so many more twists and turns, but, like, you know, basically Pierce Brosnan... So the woman that he's trying to extract dies. It turns out that some of the people Pierce Brosnan trusted are maybe not as trustworthy, and the protege might be working for them, and now they're, like, out to get each other, and then there's, like, a whole thing where apparently Pierce Brosnan and his protege were really close, not that we would ever know it, but they tell you, because at one point, Pierce Brosnan is trying to run to safety with a new woman that he has
looking
along.
We forget that affects the state of the world. I don't know how, but the world could come crumbling down.
So then Pierce Brosnan, like, he has to
thankfully
rescue a damsel in distress. He has to rescue this woman, and then he, like, has to get to her through another woman who's played by Olga Kurylenko, so then the two of them spend the rest of the movie, like, on the run together while they're also trying to avoid
the CIA,
Mason, and then, like, the Russians are after them. if this sounds like fucking confusing and like it doesn't make sense, like you should have been there in the theater. It didn't make any more sense in the theater. I know it sounds like I'm doing a terrible job, and it's partly because I am, but it's also
it
partly because of the movie.
It wasn't.
And this movie, it's just, first of all, it's just, as a spy thriller, it's so generic.
It's so lazy.
It's so like predictable. But the thing that I hated the most about it was just that, like, it's also just the most misogynistic film I've seen this year.
Yeah, we saw Sin City 2, guys.
This makes Sin City 2 look like a feminist...
Like Jane Austen's book club.
Street. Yeah, like, it's
the big fat guy that's seen in the storage container. Holy shit, where he's with the female agent. Holy shit. I felt bad that she has to act
as
in that movie and hear those lines delivered to her.
Can you imagine how excited she was? She's like, I got a job working with Pierce Brosnan, and then it's just her having, horrible things.
What we're talking about is at one point there's, like, a CIA agent who's, like, interviewing this other guy, and he just, like... Just, like, with, like, no provocation, he just starts calling her, like, tits.
Show me your tits.
Yeah. Like, that's, like, how the, like, she's interviewing, and that's, like, how the interview
starts. And that's
one
of the mellower moments, actually. Like, there's, like, one character that's introduced only to have sex with another character and then be fridge. There's this really disturbing rape scene that sexualizes a character when she really
shouldn't
be.
There's a disturbing rape scene that shows up right as it's like, there's this woman that's like dressed, you know, kind of like not in an overtly sexy way most of the time. And then the one time she gets like super like,
they gave her a postage stamp as a dress.
Yeah. And then they're like, and now watch
her nipples and her vagina.
And now they're like, and now watch her get raped.
To make her into like a cheap looking Bond girl. That's what it was.
Yeah. That's how she's seen on the poster, actually, which is really insulting.
But, like, even getting away from that, this movie is so lazy. It's the kind of movie that tells you things instead of showing them. And the example that I want to give is, like, at one point, so then... Pierce Brosnan and Olga Kurylenko are on the run, and Mason, who's played by Luke Bracey, is, like, you know, chasing them, and, like, he obviously wants to kill them. And while they're on the run, Olga Kurylenko's like, why do you hate the man who's trying to kill us?
Because that's what you asked.
You would think that the answer would be self-evident, but, no, it turns out the answer is, I don't hate him. In some ways, he's the best friend I ever had. And you're just like, really? Because up until this point, you see no indication that they're anything other than, like, two people who used to work together.
It's also such a sloppily made movie that things keep ending up in the frame that cause laughs from the audience that I
know what you're talking about.
Oh my God.
Like, there's one part where Mason gets bad news, and in the background, there's a sign that says relax, and I don't think it was intended to be there. I think it's supposed to maybe be... It was like a workout machine. So then maybe it's supposed to be product placement. But because he's having like a hissy fit in the foreground and then just relaxed in the background, people are laughing. There's one scene where there's like a drunk woman wandering around.
The best one, it's like someone's racing into the fancy hotel and you're supposed to be following the person racing into the fancy hotel, and right behind them is this blonde, I think she's wearing white.
Yeah,
it's just in like the perfect spot in the frame where like that is what your eye is drawn right to.
Yeah.
And it looked almost like it was just like a crew member that like didn't realize camera started rolling,
like,
and then they just like kept going.
I thought it was just a woman who wandered through that they were like,
I don't know.
But then there's also things like that stuff's just
and
sloppy.
Fluffy dog.
Well, yeah, there's just stuff that's just distracting you. Like, oh, is that a thing? No, that's just that you left that in this movie for no apparent reason. But then there's just moments that are just so poorly orchestrated.
The dialogue is also incredibly repetitive. People say the same thing over.
Yeah,
one
it treats you like you're an idiot. Like, oh, were you not paying attention the first three times we said this? Here's again.
Yeah.
There's one point where one character says to another a place to go, and then that character turns to a character standing behind him and has to repeat the same thing.
He's literally,
you know, that's the point of movies, is that's
two.
Not necessary.
It's like when people don't say goodbye on the phone. It's because we get it. It's fine.
Yeah.
We don't need to bother with that. Or
people,
no one ever gets changed at a store.
People just do stupid, irrational things. It's kind of like what you brought up before. They went through all that crazy shit, and she walks out onto the street, and she's like, why do you hate that person? And then there's other parts where, after, like, all hell breaks loose, she sits down at a cafe to have a fucking cup of coffee, and then another scene, after all the stuff in the hotel with all the rape stuff, someone goes and just, like, takes a shower.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
there's a lot of downtime
to have a lot of drinks.
Like, hey, you know what? I know this guy's out to kill me. Maybe I'll go make a smoothie and throw it over.
Yeah,
so this happens after, so Pierce Brosnan and his protege see each other for the first time. It's the kind of thing where there's a shootout and then suddenly they're face to face and they realize
and
that the people they're trying to kill
are guns on each other.
Yeah, and then they walk away and then we follow like the younger man, Mason, right? And what he does is he goes to the grocery store,
buys every vegetable,
fruits and vegetables, then he goes home and he makes himself a smoothie.
Yeah,
and I'm not kidding.
And
like,
you watch all of
this. Yeah.
Like,
this is
why do we need to watch him go grocery shopping? Oh, I don't know.
And like, and I bet you anything, the answer to that would be like, oh, because it's like real and that makes him human. Ugh.
You know what's infuriating also is that this movie, despite the fact it's a spy movie, it seems like it's set in like the late 90s because like people have cell phones, but they don't look like the cell phones you have in most.
And it's
every
like that hacker's computer setup. That seems so big.
I would buy that maybe the movie is supposed to be set in the 90s, even though they never explain it. But that's the thing, it feels really weird.
And then like just the leaps in logic it makes. Like there's a key moment where someone has to. Is it okay to say the email thing?
Just don't explain what they're sending.
There's a point where someone needs to email important information and they want to get the word out about this thing. And they email editors@newyorktimes.com, which again elicited huge laughs from the audience, which is not supposed to be a joke, it's supposed to be a plot point. But it's just so ridiculous. We have in no way established the New York Times, so you just say editors@newyorktimes.com because that'll work, right? Ugh. Like, that's the level this movie operates at. It basically thinks that everybody watching it is an idiot or is only half paying attention, so you're going to be grateful for these really stupid plot points.
The only bright side of this movie is that, you know, Pierce Brosnan's pretty good. At his age, he could still carry this shit pretty well.
Okay, you can tell when there's a stunt double.
It's kind of rough.
Really?
It was jarring to me.
I feel like he's good looking, he's Pierce Brosnan, he's a decent actor, but I was grateful that
him and the older character don't have a romantic relationship.
Thank God.
I was grateful for that, because
I was getting worried by the other guy. I liked looking at the other guy, what's his real name?
Mason.
Yeah, I like looking, but he only has one facial expression.
He does only have one facial expression. Okay, I've been trying to
Jay Courtney for about half the movie.
He's not Jay Courtney, he looks like if Paul Walker and Chris Cooper had a baby and Chris Hemsworth raised him. That's my theory.
That's good to know.
Is that a real person?
No, I'm not fan fiction. I'm saying what he looks like. I'm not saying that was his life. Is that not accurate?
I think I'll Photoshop this and see if it works out.
Well, he looks like, have you ever seen a blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy in a movie? That's what he looks like.
Yeah, no, that's totally true.
And that's like, that, again, that's the level of this movie.
Like,
it's incredibly generic.
Yeah.
He really has one face.
And it's also,
he's like, I'm just going to be in the Point Break remake, by the way.
Pierce Brosnan executive produced this movie, so it feels very much like he thought this was going to be his next big thing.
Well, there's that whole bullshit with the sequel.
Yeah,
and I forgot who
they,
said,
they
it.
Announced
I forgot who
the
said
sequel.
It the other night, but I think that's why it happened. I think that it was tracking poorly, and it was like a last-ditch effort to breathe some life into the box office for this thing.
People are like, it has a sequel.
They announced the sequel in hopes that people would feel more obligated to see this one.
I don't know who this movie is for, because like it feels like Pierce Brosnan and the lead, they're hoping for slightly older audiences,
yeah,
but
I
it's
think
way
that's
too violent
it's,
and weird
see,
for that.
See, that's why I think that they can get away with the tech shit, because I think it is for people who, you
but
know...
Like, it's for older people. I think it's for people who's, like, they're, you know, like, the people who, for whom Bond is, like, Pierce Brosnan and the guy before him.
I guess.
Yeah.
It's...
I don't know that you people should just rent Bond again.
Well, it's just a stupid movie, too.
Yeah.
That makes it not for anyone.
I genuinely do think this is one of the worst movies I've seen all year.
It is one of the worst movies I've seen all year.
Like, the story doesn't make sense, the characters are very poorly drawn, the dialogue is laughably bad, the movie is just sloppily made. Like,
the characters have no personality, and what little personality they do show, they're incredibly unlikable.
I liked one thing about this movie. There is a hitman who's a woman, and I liked her.
She's cool.
She was rad.
She's cool.
She's barely in the movie.
Yeah.
Don't watch it for her.
I thought she has two lines. No, that's true. Don't watch it for her. But she doesn't have lines. She just kind of shows up and, like, kills people horribly.
She's probably, like, the Zoe Bell of whatever country she's from.
Probably.
I want to see her and Zoe Bell.
I liked her. She was no nonsense. Like, we don't know anything about her other than she's a killer,
yeah.
But that was fine.
She was just interesting looking.
Yeah, and she, like, went about her business in a very direct way.
Yeah.
She seemed like she was from a different movie. Like, at the beginning of the year, I saw, like, Jack Ryan, which I was just like, oh, I mean, it's competent, but it's, like, not very good. It's so generic. This is not even competent.
No, it's not.
Like,
no.
It's, the filmmaking is not competent. The camera doesn't know what it's doing. The actors don't, well, no one tells them what they're doing, so they don't really seem to know. It's
the exposition
on every level.
So lazy.
There
really isn't.
And when they reveal the final twist, first of all, the final twists are not surprising. There's two of them.
They're telegraphed from about a mile away.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, if you don't figure out how this is going to end 30 minutes in, I just don't think you've seen movies before.
If you want to make yourself feel like a smart person, you should see this. Because you'll be like a step ahead of the story the whole way.
No, that's a terrible idea. This movie is so bad, it might make you dumber. don't recommend people watching being this smart.
All right. You just insert that Billy Madison quote. We're all dumber for having
that. Yes.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
So that happened this week.
Month.
So August has been rough. So if people are going to the movies this weekend, what would you recommend they see? It does not need to be a new release. It could be something that's still out.
Guardians.
Honestly, if you were like, I need to see a new movie this weekend, stay home. Look what's on VOD. There's probably something you missed that's worth watching.
I'm not even kidding.
There's like nothing.
A Startup is on VOD.
Yeah. There you go. Startup?
And I think it's only in very, very select theaters.
I would still recommend Frank. I like that a lot. If it's playing near you, go see it.
Snowpiercer's still playing in New York. So I think it's still on VOD. And it's actually out on DVD, I think, next week. So also Snowpiercer.
Oh,
which,
cool.
By the way, I'm just going to throw out there, has been put up for consideration for the Oscars. They've sent DVDs to the Academy. So hopefully.
That's sweet.
Yay.
Yeah, that's exciting news.
Nice. But yeah, so I think we're all agreed. November Man, piece of crap, don't watch it. Doesn't need to exist. You don't need to acknowledge its existence. We watched it so you didn't have to, now you can be happy and just move on with your life.
Actually, when we left the theater in November Man, Angie said she hates this podcast because this is the only reason we saw November Man.
I didn't even say my least favorite part of this movie.
Oh, please.
Fucking popcorn man behind me.
To be fair, that's not Pierce Brosnan's mouth. There was a guy behind her.
There was a guy behind her who was eating popcorn with his mouth open the entire movie.
I didn't even know it's possible to make noises that loud. Like even
it
if
was
you tried.
It was literally like sound effects for eating popcorn. It was just this like one smacking sound for. I mean, he ate it for at least the first hour.
Throughout the entire movie. Like, was it a bottomless bag? I don't understand.
There's a poll quote. Not worse than a guy eating popcorn with his mouth open for 2 hours.
Okay.
Oh, man. So, yeah.
Guys, it was a rough week at the movies.
You better fucking appreciate what we have done for you.
All right. Well, that's it.
But we have exciting news.
Yeah, so we can finish on, like, a happier note. Do you want to explain what the plan is?
Yeah, okay. So, you guys know that we're big fans of Winter's Tale and that it's just so spectacularly bad. And it's out on DVD now, and we've decided that we should really revisit Winter's Tale. But we're not going to review it again. You guys should definitely go back and watch our Winter's Tale review if you haven't seen it, because it's still one of my favorites. We're gonna watch it, and we want you to watch it with us, and we'll do a live commentary. It's gonna be on, remind me the date, September
12th, the night before we go.
Yeah, it's gonna be on September 12th. September 12th. We'll come up with a specific time soon, so watch on Twitter. But we're gonna actually watch it. We'll do it on Google Chat, so you can watch it with us and enjoy this. So rent Winter's Tale. We promise we'll make it worth it, because it's so much fun. And then we'll have more Winter's Tale information forthcoming later, which will be more fun, special stuff.
It's gonna be so exciting!
Yes! We're very excited. We've legit been, like, talking about watching Winter's Tale again for months.
We haven't ever stopped making t-shirts.
That's
true. We are gonna make,
We need to get on these t-shirts.
Yeah,
So we have them in time.
Anyway.
Alright, so more to come, but until that actually happens, you could find us on popcornprosecco.com. On YouTube, our Popcorn Prosecco channel. We are also on iTunes. Go there, rate us, comment. We
subscribe.
Love to hear. Yeah, subscribe.
After what we had to watch for you, you better rate us.
Yeah, that's the least you could do.
Spread
what am I missing? I'm
friends.
Missing Twitter. We're on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco, and then all three of us are on Twitter and all over the web as well. Christy, you want to take it first?
Sure. I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. I read all over the place, but you can find highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for SlashFilm.com.
And I'm on Twitter at PNemiroff, and I'm on Collider.com. So that's it for this week. Thank you guys for watching, and we will see you next time.
Let's do the wave.
Oh, shit.
We screwed that up. Shark by Tara. Sponsored by Shark by Tara. Not really. No, don't sue us.
I don't know if he's two in your head, and maybe you're mad because you never had a daddy.
I'll get him.
Oh, my God.
Look at where Dewey's sitting.
Oh, hey!
I hope that gets in the frame.
I think he is.
Can I pull Shark by Tara into the frame?
Yeah.
Can we just, like, have it around?
Oh, we should have it. The caption for Twitter said something like, Jessica Alba rips it in Sin City 2. I was like, okay, where I'm from, rips it means you farted. Which would make sense for Sin City too.
Look, it was she was probably in San Francisco. She probably did fart at some point.